For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
So many sports are in full swing right now, so there's no better time to get into sports betting than this very second. Go to Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts. And hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Believe in Clippers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Jesse Cass and Alex Acker here with you. And Alex, we're here the morning after the Clippers survive and advance. They win in Game 7 over the Dallas Mavericks after being down 2-0 at home, 3-2. They come back and win the series 126-111, the final. What are your thoughts coming after Game 7 and the huge win for the Clips?
Man, if you can see my face, I'm smiling cheek to cheek right now. I'm excited. These guys played well, man. They played really well. Even the bench collectively played well. I'm really excited just how the veterans showed up, Batum and Morris, and it's phenomenal, you know what I mean, to advance to the next round for sure. After being down 0-2 to an unbelievable tough team and pulling through, it shows a lot of character for sure.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we've talked throughout the series. We had a couple pods last week when it was 0-2 and then when it was 2-2. And for this team, I think one thing that we and everyone else was looking to see is, you know, when they get hit with adversity, how do they respond? And clearly, you know, it's only one round, but they were up against it a couple of times. We said down 2-0 at home. They lose game 5 at home in pretty heartbreaking fashion. Have to go on the road again. And, you know, time and time again, they've kind of passed the test here early on in these playoffs. And, you know, obviously a great sign considering what happened last year and their ability to overcome that and come away with a win.
For sure. Yeah, it's crazy how things fall into you always dream to the past of man, not this again. We talked about that as well, too. And they're actually overcoming it. So I'm really excited, man. Utah is a great contending team. I'm sure they don't have Luka Doncic on that team that's so explosive to that point, but they just play collectively. They swing the ball very well. And, you know, you got to change whole transition as far as how to play right now, you know. So it's going to be interesting how fast we can bounce back and move on.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into the Utah series and that matchup and what's lying ahead for the Clippers coming up pretty soon. Actually, tomorrow night is game one, so quick turnaround for that. But, you know, sticking on this series for a second, you know, like you said, there's so many key contributors to the wins and the series win for the Clippers and a lot of the role guys stepping up. But we know it starts with the stars, and in particular, Kawhi Leonard. Now, you know, Paul George did a great job as well, but I think it's pretty clear who the alpha guy is on this team, who the best players. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, obviously game 7 was phenomenal. 28 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, no turnovers. But game 6 in Dallas, when they're down 3-2, you know, for Kawhi, who of course has won a couple of championships, he's got iconic performances like that, you know, the game winner against Philadelphia a couple years ago. But that game ranks right up there at the top with 45 points, the defense he played on Luka. It was just an unbelievable performance by Kawhi and saved the Clippers season at the exact time that they needed it.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man. We didn't even talk about that game. That was crazy. If anybody could pull it off like that, it has to be Kawhi. You know what I mean? He smashed every single statistic, and every single point was needed. All 45 points was needed. You know, he was cooking on some MJ type stuff right now. You know, know, the team he carried on his back like he always does, you know what I mean? So hats off to him. Paul George followed through as well, too. And I just love the fact that they're filling up the stat sheets, you know what I mean? So everybody's engaged. They're rebounding phenomenal, too, as well, and into the free throw line, you know. So it's a beautiful thing to actually watch these two dudes compete on a high level on the same team like this.
Yeah, and on Kawhi, what did you see? You know, obviously Luka was off the charts in this series pretty much throughout. But I think in particular, we know obviously Kawhi was on Luka as much as the Clippers wanted, or he could be for a long time, but it seemed to be a much more concerted effort game six, game seven, where instead of taking those switches, we saw Kawhi really, you know, fight over those screens, and he was really the only defender who, you know, gave Luka trouble. Anyone else, Luka was cooking, but Kawhi Leonard and his ability to just fight through, use his length and his strength to bother Luka at least a little bit was a huge kind of turning point in getting the Clippers to where they wanted to be.
Yeah, for sure. And we always talked about how exceptional Luka is in all-star level years, but to actually have somebody with a 7'3" wingspan, you know what I mean, and Shaquille O'Neal hands in your face 40 minutes of the game, it's kind of hard to actually not take that into consideration. He's taking tough shots, but he's taking more shots. You know, had to shoot 24 shots to get 29 points. You know, so he's definitely going to get his numbers, but at the same time, it's how he gets his numbers and how much energy he's exerting. You know, and to go to show off that situation too as well, he has to play defense. You know, so as both ends of the floor, you know, you can shoot the ball out, lights out, but you got to play at the other end too as well. You got to have the energy to compete at that end too. If your man is getting 40 something points and you're getting 29 and you're shooting 11 for 24, he's actually winning that battle nine times out of ten for sure.
Yeah, and you know, for you know, Kawhi Leonard, obviously this is what you get him for, right? When you, you give up all these draft picks, we know that that's technically the Paul George trade, but really, you know, Kawhi's not coming if Paul, that trade doesn't happen. So you give up all that capital and great, you know, good young players like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. This is the reason why, where you get a guy who he's proven in the playoffs, he's done it, even with, you know, last year he had one bad game, which happened to be game seven. You know, he had a subpar game five, but outside of that, you look at just the total numbers for the series, and it's just pretty unbelievable for Kawhi. I mean, he averaged nearly 33 points and 8 rebounds. He shot 60% from the field. And a little note on that, the last player to average 30 points per game and shoot 60% from the field in a playoff series was Shaq in 2000. And he obviously shot right at the rim. So Kawhi was shooting jump shots and creating at all different levels. That he shot 60%, it's just unbelievable.
Crazy. And you gotta understand too, like, as stacked as that team was last year, it was the first time they actually played together. Yeah. You know, so any situation like that is going to take time. You know, I know this team has been built to actually win right now, right then, even last year as well too. They harped on it, but it takes time to get that chemistry and that gel, and a lot of luck in the playoff situation. You know what I mean? And it deals with health and those concerns, and they were not healthy at that time, and now they don't have no excuses. You know, no, everybody's healthy, everybody's working, they have a packed house as far as the bench that they can play at any time at their disposal, and the list goes on. Even with the coaching staff situation, you know, they're willing to take risks and all the way through the beginning of the playoffs, you know, and making key changes and not just going in there with pure talent thinking that they're going to actually win games in that situation. So they're doing the right things right now for sure.
Yeah, and that's a great segue too, because that's something we touched on and we're hopeful for when, you know, Ty Lue was named the head coach and coming into this series and what he could do adjustment-wise. And obviously it took a little bit of time, but, you know, you mentioned not being afraid to make bold moves, make changes. And we saw it time and time again in this series where, you know, Ty Lue was always pushing the right buttons, whether it was in games 3 and 4, you know, Rondo made a big impact. And then when he, you know, wasn't playing well and Dallas adjusted to him, we saw Ty Lue go to Luke Kennard and Terrence Mann. And, you know, we've talked about how much we think Terrence Mann can make an impact, and went from not playing in the beginning of the series. He was the first guy off the bench in game seven and made a huge impact, especially in the first half when the Clippers kind of needed to match that kind of barrage from Luka Doncic. Terrence Mann was a big part of that with his early burst in scoring 12 points in the first half.
Yeah, for sure. And to yeah, me and you are both Terrence Mann fans for sure. You know what I mean? Just the leadership of his aggressiveness on defense as well. You know, sometimes he gets cooked, but that's from a rookie standpoint, just over helping or too much pressure, you know, from that standpoint. But the effort and energy is there. The great thing about it all is that I seen that Tyronn Lue did is he set Pat Beverly, you know what I mean? And he actually, that was a tough pill to swallow to actually, you know, one of your leaders and sit him and try to figure out how to win, knowing that he's going to be uncomfortable in this situation where he has to watch his team win or lose. And you got to swallow that pill at the end of the day and make that decision, you know? So those are huge, you know, considerations you got to take in mind for sure, too.
No, and that's a great point, too. And we've talked about how important Patrick Beverly has been throughout the years for the Clippers, but it's those kind of things, those tough decisions for Ty Lue where, you know, this guy might need to sit in this specific series where it's not a good matchup. And, you know, as we said, we'll get into the Utah series. That one might be one where Beverly is important again. But right now, you know, in this Dallas series, it was a tough matchup for him. He was kind of getting picked on in the switches with Doncic. And that was one of those tough choices that Lue had to make that, again, he pushed the right buttons. You can say the same thing with Zubats, who's been so good this year, but it was not a great series for him. The Clippers were better equipped going small, and they did that. And, you know, those are those adjustments and tough decisions that Ty Lue made and just pushed the right buttons when the Clippers needed it.
Yeah. That was like the executive decision right there for sure. And it's crazy because you mentioned Zubats, and I'm like, damn, I'm looking at the stats. I haven't even seen him. But the idea of going small, it kind of sometimes bit him in the butt because, you know, you got 2 7-footers that you're going up against, and Dallas went big a couple of times, you know, with Porzingis and the big fella that's like 7'5".
Yeah, Boban.
Yeah. So those are kind of crazy matchups. They're playing, you know, hot potato on lobs over to each other, and nobody can compete from that standpoint of defending them. But they have to put it on the ground. I mean, we put it on the ground very well, you know, and that goes to say, and I wanted to give credit to Batum, who went in there a couple of times ferocious, you know, and tried to dunk on the big fella. So those things was actually really engaging to actually see, and the bench got, you know, alive and excited and hyped about it. And just playing with the crowd more than anything, too, it brought some life to everything. So, man, it was an amazing series. It was a nail-biting series for sure. And I was excited all the way through to see what they were going to do, what they're going to be made of, and how they're going to finish out strong.
Yeah, and how about that? You mentioned the fans. How about getting a win at home? How about that concept?
Getting a win. Let's go. Yeah, you said that, too. You was like, man, can we get a win at home?
But, I mean, again, that, like you said, just it's one of those series. You give both teams credit where, I mean, first time in NBA history, the first 6 games, each team won on the road. So, you know, it sucked for them to lose those games at home from, you know, 1, 2, and 5, especially with game 5 and how tough that one was down the stretch. But, again, that resiliency and you know, perseverance to break through and win when their backs were against the wall, you know, should hopefully bode well for them going forward. But, again, on your point of Nick Batum, I mean, again, we were talking about Terrence Mann, how high we were on him, and we both were pretty happy with the Batum signing, but just the impact that he's had, I don't know if anyone could have really predicted just how good he would be and how instrumental he would be to the Clippers. I mean, he played 42 minutes in Game 7. You mentioned, you know, he's not that old a player. He's more mature and wise than you would think. He's 32 years old. It feels like he should be like 38 with how long he's been in the league. But yeah, 42 minutes, he's turning back the clock a little bit, trying to dunk, as you said, on Boban and like hitting threes. And obviously his defense was phenomenal. So just the impact that he's had and making that ability to kind of play that cat and mouse game where it's like, hey, if Dallas, even if you're going super duper big, we're going to stick small because we trust Batum, what he can do defensively, and how he kind of settles things offensively as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. And hats off to him too. I mean, he's actually taking that role of being a leader as well, and mentoring man. I would think so too. You know, because that's his role, and he's seeing how to play with the poise and more so just the determination of just getting the job done. So it's doing a lot of things. Just having him inside that in that situation with the Clippers for sure, on and off the court.
Yeah, and what do you think of Paul George this series? You know, he had great numbers, obviously, coming off the playoff series last year. He hasn't shot the three ball well, but from the field in general, he's been pretty good. Obviously, he's been rebounding, passing the ball. His defense is always there. But what did you see from Paul George in this round one?
Man, Paul George is phenomenal. His playoff P is definitely back right now. You know, he's been extremely solid. And I don't mean solid just by saying that, just like, oh, he's expected to do this. Like, he's been doing a phenomenal job just playing his game, you know, just being poised as he is. And he's just been bringing it every single game. You know, you can't knock this guy actually averaging 23, 5, and 6. It's crazy to even think about that, especially on a team where you got somebody that's the alpha, like you said in the beginning, and learning how to play with somebody that is just as dominant as you with the ball too as well. So you just got to be more consistent more than anything. And it shows, you know, 46% field goal percentage. And he's lights out for sure. He got laser eyes. And that's amazing to actually see that, the chemistry between him and Kawhi balancing off each other.
Yeah, I think that chemistry has grown leaps and bounds from year one to year two. And I think that, like you said, just impacting the game in all different kinds of ways with, you know, 10 assists in game 7, obviously the rebounding that he's been able to bring in. And I think, you know, mentioning that the three-point shot has been inconsistent in the series, he didn't let that affect him, you know, very adversely during the series. He was still attacking the basket, still getting to the free throw line, even when his shot wasn't necessarily falling as much as he would like it to. He didn't let it affect his game. So I thought that was probably the most important thing for him, and a great sign that, you know, Paul George, who might have been the most criticized player in the world over the past year, has clearly, you know, responded as well as you could and came back with a really strong effort in this first round.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And looking forward for the Clippers, you know, just touching on a few things before we move to the Jazz series. Obviously, Marcus Morris found his touch, 7 of 9 from three-point range. We were waiting for that one. We knew it was in there and capable, but perfectly timed for Morris in game 7. And Reggie Jackson, and that's another, you know, Ty Lue pushing the right button where, you know, we talked at length about, you know, what the point guard rotation would be. It's clear that, you know, Reggie has the trust of Ty Lue and the team, and he makes big shots. He was huge in game 6. He made a couple of dagger shots in game 7, and you know, pretty incredible for Reggie Jackson, who was the last guy signed in the offseason on a veteran's minimum, you know, was benched in the very beginning of the season when he was told he wasn't going to be in the rotation. Now he's the starting point guard and a huge part of what the Clippers have done, especially offensively.
Yeah, for sure. And these two gentlemen have been, you know, been fighting the up and down, you know, heel as far as getting their game to where it needs to be. And in order to get this win all the way up to this point, you know, and starting off with Morris, man, we've been seeing him struggle a lot with that jump shot, and he's a jump shooter, you know, and it's hard to find that niche of him catching and shooting at the right time and, you know, finding ways of creating for himself as well, because pretty much all the plays are generated for, you know, Kawhi and Paul George, but actually just getting his shots is something that he struggled with in the beginning. You know, and I really see that he went in with some great shots that he normally missed, because he always gets these same shots, and we seeing him getting wide open shots, or, you know, just getting a hand raised in his face and he's missing them, falling short or whatever the case may be. But he's knocking them down when they count it more than anything. So that was amazing to see that. 23 points at the right time is crazy. You know, 8 for 15. That's phenomenal. You know, we knew Jackson had it in him. In order to score, he's been a scorer. Even in Detroit, he's been a scorer. And, you know, just with the little minutes that he had, he's always been efficient from that standpoint. it was just great to actually find a way of hiding his small traits as far as the defensive end, and actually being able to find minutes to play him in the right time, you know. So again, hats off to the coaching staff, and more so hats off to, you know, the assistant staff for actually keeping these guys engaged and keeping their confidence up, you know, from Chauncey Billups and the rest of those guys that are in the staff too as well. So I'm really amazed, and it goes hand in hand with a collective unit of just being ready and being prepared mentally and physically at the same time.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, and it's something that I was thinking too coming into this, where you know, you always hear next man up, and that's what you hope for as a team and as a fan of a team, where, you know, if someone goes down or you call the next guy in the rotation, you hope they can come in and do their job. But it's sometimes it's much easier said than done. And you know, of course, mm-hmm. we talk about Jackson, but we mentioned Terrence Mann from being out of the rotation to being the first guy off the bench, and Luke Kennard, who didn't play until the middle of game six. So he didn't play for a couple of weeks. And then, you know, he didn't shoot it great in game six, but he made an impact, made a floater, got a great steal. And then game seven, he came out, had 11 points in 10 minutes, hit some couple of threes in that big third quarter run. And that's just one of those, another of those instances of staying ready and staying confident, where, as you said, you might not be playing for a while, but ready when your number is called, and came up huge when the Clippers needed it.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. Kind of like a sleeper in a way, where the teams actually don't even, you know, do the roster check as far as what you can and can't do. And then all of a sudden, you just step on the court and they forget all about you. You just shine it from that standpoint, you know. So it was one of those Cinderella stories for sure, where Kennard actually prevailed, and, you know, and Mann actually carried on as well too, and doing his job at the highest level. Definitely needed off the bench.
Yeah, and this Clippers team in the regular season, as we know, was one of the best three-point shooting teams of all time, and there were so many points in this series where, and you credit, of course, Dallas for what they did and how well they shot for a large majority of the series, but it was like you said, these wide-open shots for these guys with the Clippers where, you know, those are the shots you want. They've been hitting it all year, just wasn't going down for a certain point, and Dallas would come back and hit a contested three, and it's just kind of those throw-your-hands-up thing, but they, you know, they fought through it. They made the necessary defensive adjustments and, you know, kept stepping into those shots with confidence to finally get them to fall at the perfect time.
Yeah, for sure. Wasn't Dallas actually, you know, running a little 2-3 zone type of thing at them and stuff like that sometimes?
Yeah, especially in game seven. I mean, they ran it ever since they went big with that Boban Porzingis starting lineup that you talked about with the two giant big men in there, really to try to hide, you know, the slower-footed guys in the perimeter and not keep them out there as long. But, yeah, game seven, I believe it was the first, you know, like 8 minutes of the first quarter. It was about almost over half the time. They really stuck to that zone. And, you know, that's something, of course, for an NBA team that, you know, everyone's played against the zone at a certain point, but you're used to man-to-man defense. So I'm sure that was a little bit of an adjustment for the Clippers just to be like, okay, we're playing against the zone. You know, whatever you do at the zone, get someone in the middle, you know, free throw line extended, get the ball in the middle of the lane, and then drive and kick from there. But, a lot of zone from Dallas, a lot of kind of like throw junk at the wall type things, and, you know, give them credit. It almost worked for them in the end, but
yeah, for sure.
But the Clippers made the, you know, the necessary adjustments.
Yeah, for sure. And I would think it would work, you know, due to the fact that this series led by a lot of poor shooting from Morris and a lot of guys in that standpoint. It's kind of one of those things where you can't take away everything, but you got to take away something. So you don't want, you know, Kawhi as much as possible getting to that paint, as well as Paul George, if so, getting up with a hand up in the face, you know, stuff like that with a 7-footer, and just running at other guys, you know, with contested shots and seeing that they're going to make shots. And they did at the right time, you know. So definitely it was a zone buster, and it was amazing to see them knocking down the normal shots that they would get. It was phenomenal for sure.
Yeah, so the Clippers win round one. As we said, it's a quick turnaround to round two. Of course, you mentioned the Utah Jazz, the opponent coming up, the one seed in the West this year. Games one and two will be on the road for the Clips in Utah. A different matchup, of course. You kind of alluded to it before. No Luka Doncic, so that's a sigh of relief for the Clippers. The Jazz do, of course, present a bunch of other problems. We know Donovan Mitchell is a special player. Mike Conley, because Rudy Gobert and his presence and defense inside, and a lot of great outside shooting around those guys. So what do you see in this series and for the Clippers? You know, what's the point of attack for them to try to come out successful against the Jazz?
Oh, man, that's a great question. That is a great question. I see them actually getting what they want for sure at the same time. They can't stop everything. I think the biggest thing, once again, is going to be the defensive end. You know, the way the Utah Jazz swing the ball is pretty beautiful to watch, you know, and they work as a unit. They got guys that definitely can put it on the floor. They got, you know, a great collective unit where they can actually spread the offense out very well, knocking down threes as well, too. And it's going to be hard to take away a lot of things from them. But, yeah, going back to the draw board, man, we just got to come out with the short window that we have playing. Getting back and changing into the situation. Utah's seen them play two games now already, you know, and they got their legs up under them. So they got fresh legs from that standpoint. The best thing about it is the Clippers actually can be able to, you know, use this momentum that they have and carry it on to that series as well, too. So it's going to be actually hard to see what they can bring, but it's just got to be energy from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see, you know, the Jazz, you mentioned, 1-5. They've had some rest, I believe 6 days off. So it'll be that rest-rust thing versus, you know, if the Clippers have a rhythm going, if they're ready to go for game one. But that'll be interesting. And then, like you said, you mentioned it beautifully, that the Jazz, when they're at their best, they really move the ball as well as anyone to get their shooters open shots. I think for the Clippers, that starts with, initially, individual defense and staying in front of your man. We know that, of course, Donovan Mitchell is amazing at getting into the paint and off the dribble. You know, Mike Conley is very quick, and he can get inside with that floater game. So I think staying in front and trying to, you know, start with your individual defense before you get into those rotations where you're kind of scrambling around, I think that's a big key for the Clippers. And that might be where we see, you said, maybe Patrick Beverley's back in the mix in this series with his ability to guard on the perimeter, especially with, you know, Doncic is so unique because he's 6'8", you know, 240. He's got that LeBron-type size where, you know, that's a huge problem for almost anyone. And while Mitchell's an incredible player, you know, 6-foot guard, maybe a little more manageable for the Clippers. He's still going to be able to, I'm sure, get his points and do his thing, but in terms of what size-wise, the Clippers, I think, can match up with that a little bit better. And then, you know, of course, the Rudy Gobert thing is huge, where we know how important he is to Utah. Can the Clippers kind of play him off the floor? Do they go small again and try to drag Gobert away from the basket, get him out on the perimeter? And if, you know, that cat and mouse game, if that works to kind of neutralize Gobert, or if he can make them pay with his size on the other end.
Man, just hearing that, what you said, man, that's a lot of ideas that you thrown at him to see if it's pretty much a toss up, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy from the coaching standpoint what they have to go through every single day in this fast to actually figure out a game plan to getting it going. But I know they've already started ahead. You even got Cousins that's you know, we know that he wasn't at his, you know, his peak right now, but he has a lot of rest at this point, you know. So maybe they're using him for the big fella to go up against and get him in foul trouble early. Who knows, you know, from that standpoint. But, yeah, those things are just, man, the tongue twister. There's a lot, man, that they got to figure out right now, in a short period of time.
Yeah, as you said, coaching in the playoffs, it's all about those adjustments. And I'm sure from one game to another, as we just saw in this past series, it'll be a back and forth of what works for each team. And, you know, I think the good thing or the good news for the Clippers is we've seen, like we talked about, whoever gets called upon has proven that they're ready. So if it's, you know, if Zubats is back in there to battle with Gobert for a little bit, or whether it's Cousins or whoever, you know, there's confidence, I'm sure, in the team that they will be ready. And the same goes for anyone else on the court. But obviously, a knockdown, drag them out, first round of play, and we'll see what the second round brings. But you know, the name of the game is survive in advance, and somehow, some way, the Clippers are able to do it in round one.
Let's go.
All right, so that's going to do it for this little Game 7 recap, first round mini preview. We'll, of course, have more on the second round series with the Clippers and the Jazz as they get ready to roll with that game on Tuesday. We'll be back with another pod soon after to talk about everything involving the Clippers and the Jazz. But, Alex, thanks for tapping in as always, and we'll be back very soon.
Let's go, bro.
So that's it. If you enjoy the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple. 5 stars is always appreciated. We're also available wherever else you get your podcasts. And, of course, right here at Believe.com, the Believe Podcast Network, LA's number one sports podcast network, and the only place of the show for every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Go Clips in this episode presented by Bet Online. On to round two. See you there.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.